Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. We're going to be chanting text 12 and reading 11 as well as 12, because text 11 has no purport. Baho evam udvigna dasho chamane janena dakshasya mahor mahatmanaha utpetur utap tatama sahasrasho mayavaha divi bhumau chaparyak baho evam udvigna drisho chamane janena dakshasya mahur mahatmanaha utpetur utpatatama sahasrasho dayavaha divi bhumau chaparyak. Baho much evam in this manner udvigna drsha with nervous glances uchamane while this was being said janena by the persons assembled at the sacrifice dakshasya of daksha moho again and again maha atmanaha strong hearted utpetuhu appeared utpatatamaha very powerful symptoms sahasrashaha by the thousands bhaya avaha producing fear divi in the sky bhumau on the earth cha and paryak from all sides. The translation, when all the people talked amongst themselves, Daksha saw dangerous omens from all sides, from the earth and from the sky. The previous verse, this is describing this mystical personality or being or entity, Virabhadra. A fearful black demon as high as the sky and as bright as three suns combined was thereby created, his teeth very fearful and the hairs on his head like burning fire. He had thousands of arms equipped with various weapons and he was garlanded with the heads of men. So speaking of this thug, The gigantic man bared his fearful teeth. By the movements of his brows, he scattered the luminaries all over the sky, and he covered them with his strong, piercing effulgence. His effulgence was so strong, like three suns. The luminaries in the skies at night were gone. You couldn't see them because he was so effulgent. Because of the misbehavior of Daksha, even Lord Brahma, Daksha's father, could not have been saved from the great exhibition of anger. And then this verse. While all the people talked amongst themselves, Daksha saw dangerous omens from all sides, from the earth and from the sky. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, Daksha has been described as Mahatma. The word Mahatma has been commented upon by different commentators in various manners. Vidaraghava Acharya has indicated that the word Mahatma means steady in heart. And that's how Prabhupada has translated it in the word for word. He broke it up. Maha, or Maha, Atmanaha, strong-hearted. Maha, Atmanaha, strong-hearted. That is to say that Daksha was so strong-hearted that even when his beloved daughter was prepared to lay down her life, he was steady and unshaken. But in spite of his being so strong-hearted, he was perturbed when he saw the various disturbances created by the giant black demon. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks in this connection that even if one is called a Mahatma, a great soul, unless he exhibits the symptoms of a Mahatma, he should be considered a Duratma, or a degraded soul. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.13, the word Mahatma describes the pure devotees of the Lord. Mahatmanastamam parta daivim prakritim ashrita. A Mahatma is always under the guidance of the internal energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus, how could such a misbehaved person as Daksha be a Mahatma? A Mahatma is supposed to have all good qualities of the demigods. And thus Daksha, lacking those qualities, could not be called a Mahatma. He should instead be called a Duratma, a degraded soul. The word Mahatma, to describe the qualifications of Daksha, is used sarcastically. End of purport. In the background, just to do a refresh, Sati, the wife of Lord Shiva, received news that her father, Daksha, is having a big festival, and all the great personalities are going to this fantastic festival, and they'll be dressed very nicely and ornamented very nicely, and big social function. I want to go. I know you don't want me to go, and I know why you don't want me to go, because my father has offended you, but I want to go. Please let me go. Please come with me. Although I know you don't want to go, let's go. And Lord Shiva didn't tell her, no, we're not going to go. He gave her warning, if you go, there'll be bad consequences. So with his sanction, she went. And sure enough, the events resulted in, or the flow of the this festival, beginning with not inviting her daughter, or his daughter and his son-in-law, beginning with that faux pas, he continued to speak offensively towards Lord Shiva, or about Lord Shiva. And Sati, hearing this, she became so hurt and so offended by her father, she said, I don't want to have anything to do with you. And one thing that I have to do with you is this body that I have is connected to you, so I'm going to give up this body. So she entered into fire, and right in front of everybody in this big social function, she jumped in a fire. Her body was incinerated. And everybody was very shaken. Wow. It was supposed to be a nice festival. It turned out to be something horrible. Well, they read about this in the newspaper. Very bad. And as this event was taking place, those who were assisting or attending Sati, the associates of Lord Shiva, they immediately began to attack the offender, Daksha. And as Daksha was being attacked, then the priest of Daksha, Brihaspati, created a ribhu, some kind of a powerful being, that repelled the soldiers of Daksha. And when this news went to Lord Shiva, he one-upped him. He created Virabhadra by snatching some hair from his head and dashing the hair to the ground and creating this creature as tall as the sky, with hair that was like fire and effulgence that was like three suns. With his palms folded, said, Lord Shiva, you have some service for me? And Lord Shiva pointed to Daksha, destroy them all. With thousands of arms, he began charging Daksha. And so that's the scene. The anger being exhibited by this creature, this entity, Virabhadra, was so intense, the statement is being made, that even the father of Daksha, Lord Brahma himself, could not have been rescued. Just before, Prasuti, one of the wives of Daksha, she saw it coming. You messed with the wrong person. Lord Shiva, he's capable of destroying the whole universe. And the intensity of that act of destroying the whole universe is now being directed at my husband for this terrible offense. First, he offended Lord Shiva. But then, when his daughter was so disturbed that she was prepared to give up her body, he did nothing. It was que sera, sera. I guess it was intended to be. So the focus in the purport that we just read is going to this characterization of Daksha as a Mahatma. One rendering is that of Viraragava Acharya. Viraragava Acharya is a Acharya from the Sri Sampradaya, or follower of Ramanujacharya. And throughout the whole of the Bhagavatam, he's written an entire commentary on the Bhagavatam, and that's one of the principal commentaries that Prabhupada referred to when presenting his Bhaktivedanta purports. So, to repeat what is there in the purport, the Maha Atmanaha is a strong-hearted person. The other emphasis is a great-hearted person. The great-hearted person being one who has taken shelter of the internal potency of Krishna. They're exclusively engaged in devotional service to Krishna, thinking how Krishna should be pleased. That's a Mahatma. So this other idea is a strong-hearted person. That means even in the face of great adversity, they remain very strong and determined. But one can be very strong and determined for the wrong thing. And that was Daksha. So, at least Viraragava Acharya speaks of it in that way. And it's, by Prabhupada's the word-for-word translation, he's lending some support to that. However, in the purport, he's leaning towards the other explanation. So, one who is very determined for sense gratification, or determined by pride and arrogance, can be unstoppable, unchanging, unyielding to the circumstances of life. Just my thoughts now are going to Saddam Hussein. He was like arrogant to the end. He was arrogant, and although he was hiding in a hole, he was arrogant. Arrogant. So arrogant. So, in that rendering of the meaning, Maha Atmanaha, very strong-hearted, unyielding to conflict or adversity. Stubborn and foolish. So that's the wrong application. So the right application of strong-hearted is to be unyielding in the adversity, to taking shelter of the personality of Godhead, because other than in Vaikuntha, other than in the spiritual world, there's adversity. And even it's Satya Yuga, there's adversity. What to speak of, down at the bottom of the vortex of this cesspool is Kali Yuga, and lots of adversity. So how can one be a Mahatma, a great soul, in the face of so much adversity? By taking shelter of the internal potency of the personality of Godhead. And when one does so, the statement is being made here in the purport, all good qualities are there. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks in this connection, that even if one is called a Mahatma, a great soul, unless he exhibits the symptoms of a Mahatma, he should be considered a Duratma. A Mahatma is supposed to have all the good qualities of the demigods, and thus Daksha, lacking those qualities, could not be called a Mahatma, but should be called a Duratma. That's interesting. Even Vyasadeva has sarcasm. And the great Mahatma Daksha was concerned about the bad omens. So this description about bad omens is something that, you know, our subtleties don't permit us to even understand basic what to speak of omens. Hints of, or indications of, a good omen or a bad omen. What do we know? But there are portents, or there are indications of something that is about to come. That persons expert in this science can read the signs and indicate what is about to happen. There's an ISKCON devotee in South India who has become, I think he was an astrologer before he became a devotee. So then he became a devotee, and now he's become a famous astrologer. And I haven't seen this, but someone was describing this to me. He has a TV show, and one of the things that he does is he has people write something in a piece of paper and fold the paper over and then put the paper in their pocket, and then he tells them what's in what they wrote on the paper. And then when asked, and he does this again and again and again, like different ways of indicating something that's in somebody's mind, and he reads their mind. And when asked how does he do it, it has something to do with, I don't understand, don't probe on how does it work, because I don't know, but there's symptoms, there's signs, and based upon the signs, he can then indicate what those are signs of. Anyway, it's subtle. It's subtle material. Just like mystic powers are subtle material activity. Rupa Goswami describes this very thoroughly in Nectar Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Becoming very light, or becoming very heavy, or overcoming gravity and moving through the air, or creating something, or reaching some distance and obtaining something. All of these different siddhis, they're the same things that materialists are trying to do by mechanical means, by sophisticated mechanical means, by yantra. Yantra means machine. So by mechanical means, and this is, mystic powers are by subtle means. But so whether it's gross material or subtle material, it's material. And portents or omens, they're also material. And material is indicating something. Just like, you know, when the garbage truck comes through, you don't see the garbage truck, but you can certainly hear it rumbling down the alley, and then, you know, they do all that machinery and going, and oh, that's the garbage truck. So you understand something from the symptoms of that something, and even before the something starts to happen, there's some indicators before that. Anyway, Daksha was seeing these symptoms. That in the first canto Bhagavatam, there's a half a chapter describing what Yudhisthira Maharaj saw as omens that Krishna had left. And they're very, the omens themselves are fearful. And so that, all of that was confirming what intuitively Yudhisthira Maharaj already knew. Krishna has left. So there were omens indicating Krishna had left or was leaving. When There's a place, this is anecdotal, but there's a place in the Bhagavatam where when Shishupal is born, there's a description of what, you know, the symptoms are when Shishupal was born. It was bad. The sky became completely like night. And things like, you know, where there's no clouds, there's rumbling of thunder. Anyway, there's other things. So one time, I was coming from Manhattan to Brooklyn, and I came across the Manhattan Bridge and was going, you know, through some side streets to get to the temple. And all of a sudden, the sky, it was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, the sky became like night. And I thought, oh, some demon is being born somewhere here in Brooklyn. Because it wasn't all over the city, it was just in... Because I asked others later, it wasn't all over, it was just in one area. So even today, Kali Yuga, there are signs of inauspicious something is taking place or about to take place. Not much you can do, because the sign isn't going to change because you recognize the sign, or the event isn't going to change because you saw the sign. So Dakshinu, he was finished, or he was in for big trouble. Prabhupada would on many occasions speak about Mahatma Gandhi in not flattering ways, because using the same reference, Bhagavad Gita reference, Mahatma Nastamam Parada, Daivim Prakritim Ashrita, Daivim Prakritim, the spiritual potency, the divine potency, one who has fully taken shelter of the divine potency of the Supreme Lord, the internal potency of the Lord, that is a Mahatma. So how Mahatma Gandhi got that term or title Mahatma is his renown. He was very famous during his time for his austerities and his civil disobedience movement, and, you know, at least getting the credit, whether it was deserved or not, for overcoming the British and so on, you know, bringing independence to India. And in that connection, maybe 50% of the time, Prabhupada said, it was actually someone else that formed an army and defeated the British. Mahatma Gandhi's getting all the credit. But nonetheless, given that title, Mahatma, but properly, the person who is a pure devotee of the Lord is entitled to the Mahatma address. It's just like, even Krishna uses sarcasm in Bhagavad Gita, where he describes, he describes the conditioned living entity as Purusha. Because Purusha means the enjoyer. But the living entity is not Purusha, the living entity is Prakriti, the enjoyed. So the so-called enjoyer, sarcasm. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jan gunan karanam gunasangosya sad asad yoni janvasu. So when words are, our acharyas are guiding us so that we don't take the wrong meaning of things, and it's not just intellectual dilly-dallying. They're helping guide us to reach the right conclusions. So both are appropriate. It's not that Viraragava Acharya was wrong. It's correct to say he was very strong-hearted, foolish in his strong-heartedness, but very strong-hearted, stubborn, foolish, donkey, strong-hearted. Watched a man that was loading bricks on the back of his donkey. You know, trying to get the donkey to move. He did everything. He pulled the rope. He smacked him with a stick, and he kicked him, and he yelled at him, and the donkey was not going to move. Very strong-hearted, Mahatma donkey. In that sense, it's an appropriate term, very strong-hearted. But when misapplied, then it's Duratma, for the wrong purpose. Degraded soul. Okay. I think I'll end there, see if there's any discussion. Yes? There she is. Srimati Radharani. Under the guidance of Srimati Radharani. Well, she has her agents too, you know. She's not, you know, overburdened and, you know, perspiring and needing a break from devotional service. She has her representatives. And that's how the internal potency works, through the agency of entities imbued with internal potency. It's very nice. Very personal. Yes. If a person does what? If a living entity. They're not only doing that. This discussion came up the other day with someone that was saying, you know, how can we respect Indra? But he's a demigod, so how can we disrespect him? So we hear about the, you know, there's descriptions of the boo-boos that he makes, but his life is filled with devotion and service. He's a mixed devotee, but he's a great devotee. He's such a great devotee that Lord Vishnu responds to his requests for protection and, you know, help the demigods. He's kindly disposed to him. It's not like, you know, the heavenly planets or something like a nightclub. Heavenly planets are heavenly, but there's opulence, and the tendency when there's opulence to become proud of that opulence and intoxicated by that opulence and the enjoyer of that opulence, that tendency is there. But the persons are exceptionally pious, otherwise they have no access to getting there. So it's not just party time. And all they do is, you know, run after sense gratification. But that tendency is there, and the opulence is so abundant that, you know, it may be nice to be there, but it's very risky to be there. It's not safer where there isn't so much opulence. And the enjoying tendency to some degree is there, but the pious tendency is strong. So there's mistakes, more than we would want. So when we discussed this the other day, we are very fortunate. From the very outset, we're being, you know, we're still in our diapers, and we're being taught about pure devotional service. You know, before we even find out what piety is, or, you know, what to speak of, have the fruits of piety, we're being instructed and trained in pure devotional service. So, from that perspective, that's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is describing. That's the standard of a demigod, or taking these two, Sura and Asura, it's in this Sura category, or the Daivim Prakritim Ashrita category, unmixed. But then there's mixed. Because if that soul was unmixed, they wouldn't take birth in the heavenly planet. They'd go straight to the spiritual world. But there's a mix. There's devotion, and there's piety, but there's some other stuff too. Yes? When we're chanting the holy name, then some middle part I missed. And then ecstasy is not taking place is because of committing offenses. Okay, got it. Your question is about strong-heartedness, stone-heartedness, steel-heartedness. Steel-framed heart, that's the Bhagavatam's phrase. Well, you gave the answer. What was the answer you gave? Due to offenses, right? So then the next question is, what to do? That's the next question. Overcome the offenses. Gradually, through all those resources that you mentioned. You don't want it gradually, you want it at once. Well, the eagerness to have it is part of the qualification. It's not, you know, complacency isn't going to, it'll be very slow when there's complacency. There'll be benefit from being in the proximity of so many resources, so many encouraging, kindnesses that Krishna is extending. Eagerness is good. Patience is also good. Utsahan. What's the next one? Nishchayat. Dhairyat. Nishchayat. Enthusiasm. Utsahan. And patience. Patience doesn't mean casual or complacency. It means trusting in Krishna, the outcome can come in due course of time. And I trust that it will because I trust Krishna. That doesn't reduce my enthusiasm. It's a nice quality, patience. Very nice quality. It's the antidote for passion. The enthusiasm that's raw in a passionate way. I want the result. One can still want to be engaged in service and allow Krishna to deliver the result in his sweet time. However quickly, slowly, or in between that happens, by Krishna's own sweet will, as he wishes, I can be very patient. Because he's the controller, not me. It's a good thing, too. Be patient. But don't that patience should not diminish enthusiasm. Because that's a very good quality. Being so appreciative of all the resources being sent my way, I really should take advantage of these resources. Let me be enthusiastic. At the same time, patient. It's not like, go, stop. It's not, go, stop. It's go, 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 and continue to go without any stoppage, without apparently receiving this, you know, breakthrough of my steel-framed heart. That will happen in due course of time. I'm patient. My enthusiasm is not tempered or limited. And the third is conviction. And that's what allows the balance between enthusiasm and patience, is deep conviction. Dhairyat. Very much like the word dhira. You know that word, right? Dhira. Sober. Not intoxicated. Dhira. Very steady. Good. You got it. Okay. Something else? Yeah. I don't know what you're referring to. That's news to me. Well, I'll tell you what, if you show me where the reference is, I'll go to where I have commentaries of our acharyas translated and see if they illumine that idea. Personified anger? It's in the translation or?
Translation of the verse.
Text 5. Maitreya said, my dear Vidura, that black person was the personified anger of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What does that mean? There's no purport. Let me go to the commentaries and see. I'll let you know. Anything else? Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.